Chapter 17. Master of Macragge. Dantioch's Message. Nova. Gilliman came to the Pharos locus as soon as the news of the attack reached his ears. Full of wrath, he strode into the ruins of the Chapel of Memorial. Behind him came his assembled senior officers, all the chapter masters of the Ultramarines on Macragge, and representatives from every other legion present. They jogged to keep up with the Primarch's furious pace. Then came the human members of his war council at full run. Men from the Imperial Adepta, the Astra Telepathica, the government of Macragge, their aides, their servants. The frailest lagged far behind. The Lord of Macragge did not wait for them. He came to a halt at the boundary of the Pharos's communication field, right before Dantioch's seat. His expression was unreadable, but his anger roared through the Pharos with the force of a blow. Pollux thought that if Gilliman were to take another step, he would leave Macragge behind again, whether he wished to or not. That would be a disastrous eventuality, and he willed the Primarch to remain safely where he was. Dantioch began to rise, but Gilliman held out his hand, palm flat.
Sit, Dantioch. Report. Tell me what occurs at Sotha.
The Primarch's face was regal as ever, but his voice was clotted with suppressed emotion. Dantioch sank stiffly back into his chair, his neck craning so that he could look up at his commander. Gilliman had enough presence of mind, even in the depths of his fury, to notice the discomfort that caused him and took a step backwards. Pollux felt a little easier at that. The Emperor?
I will advise him once I am apprised of the situation, said Gilliman hotly. Report.
Very well, said Dantioch. We are under attack by a large force of the Eighth Legion. They came upon Sotha unobserved, in direct opposition to the Pharos's interference field. They have taken the city, my lord, and the orbital has fallen.
Gilliman's lips thinned and became paler.
What of the Ajida Company? What is the fate of my 199th?
As per Captain Adalus's rota, half were in the Castellum, half aboard the orbital.
An Ultramarines provost stepped forwards to Dantioch's side. The Castellum was taken this morning, my lord.
Sergeant Achaemenides, said Gilliman,
displaying the keen faculties of his memory. It was said that he knew every one of his sons by sight and name. Pollux could believe it was true.
Yes, my lord. We gave as good account as we could, my lord, but there were some 6,000 arrayed against us. We had too few to repel their attack, and they landed siege tanks as soon as they had overwhelmed our air defence. I am sorry, my lord.
It is I who should apologise to you, my son, said Gilliman grimly. You killed many of theirs.
Kill ratio statistics suggest 5 of theirs died for every one of ours.
You did well.
Achaemenides bowed his head hesitantly, made to speak, thought better of it, and stepped back.
When the Castellum fell, some of the 199th's number made their way into the mountain, said Dantioch.
How many?
Said Gilliman.
Dantioch paused. There are 56 here with Achaemenides. 30, perhaps, 40 more entered lower down and took refuge in the catacombs. I do not have precise numbers. The Night Lords are beginning to foray into the lower caves, and we can hear fighting. But we cannot contact our own forces by Vox. Not from here.
Less than 100 men from 1,000.
The grief in Gilliman's eyes brimmed over, swamping his impassive expression.
They were sorely outnumbered, Lord Gilliman. There are at least 10,000 of the enemy here, probably more, said Pollux.
You asked for more men, Captain.
I did.
Pollux's face was as stony as Gilliman's. He did not care to hide his opinions from his superiors.
But the Lion vetoed the request.
Yes, he did, my lord, said Pollux. You agreed with him.
Would that I had not. Secrecy, he said, is better than an iron defence.
Gilliman spoke through gritted teeth, his fists clenched.
I followed his counsel, and we are close to disaster. And where is he now?
My lord, anything less than a fifth of a legion would not have aided us. The enemy came in such great numbers, said Pollux.
And yet, you are there, and he is not. Do not defend my brother, Alexis Pollux. He shall answer to me himself.
The picket ships did not detect the enemy, Lord, said Pollux.
Do you have any indication where they came from? Asked Verus Caspian, master of the Ultramarine's first chapter.
My Lord Gilliman, we must be alert to further attacks on our territory.
They must have been nearby for some time, said the Primarch, before Dantioch
or Pollux could answer.
Perhaps even before we ignited the Pharos, certainly long enough to gather information as to our weaknesses.
Gilliman's powerful intellect overrode his emotions, and he paced back and forth across the broken floor of the chapel, brows knotted in concentration. Through the empathic capabilities of the Pharos, both Pollux and Dantioch felt his fury ebb as his titanic intelligence came into play.
It's the most plausible explanation. Kurz. I sense Kurz's hand behind this. He was here, right in this chapel, and now his legion is there.
He tapped at his chest, armored fingers stirring the many decorations hanging there.
Or is it coincidence? Both are possible. I need more information.
This attack is either an anomaly or the beginning of something bigger, said Dantioch.
How much can Kurz know of the beacon's importance or capability? Gilliman murmured. What is his purpose? These are the questions we must ask ourselves. Theoretical. He knows nothing. We know precious little ourselves. Kurz comes here by chance aboard my brother's ship. Another damnable secret.
His composure slipped a little, but was quickly reimposed.
His legion, fleeing the Thramas Crusade, arrives at Sothur some time ago, by chance. It is on the fringes of my territory and poorly mapped. They hide somewhere outside the system boundaries. They see the Pharos and are drawn in. It is our ill fortune that their numbers are so much larger than ours. Or...
He slapped his fist into the other huge palm.
Theoretical. Kurz arrives here. The Pharos's importance is obvious, even to his twisted mind. He communicates with his legion, perhaps through the Pharos itself. He was within the chapel for minutes. He possesses some of our father's mental ability, after all. Could he have been in communication with his fleet astropaths, even while you fought him, Pollux?
Is that possible? Do we know? Asked Melios, lieutenant of the Primarch's Invictus bodyguard. What do you say, Lord Prato? Have the Librarius any further insight to offer in the matter? Titus Prato stepped forwards. He was the master of the presiding centuria, in the continued absence of their chief librarian, Lord Promus.
We have investigated the possibility of furthering the range of psychic communication via the Pharos beam, he said. It was not amenable to the operation.
But we cannot know for certain that it is impossible, said Sergio, one of his attendant epistolaries.
I have been to Sothur and spoken with those who were touched by the device's influence. My time in the vicinity of the mountain revealed nothing conclusive to me. We might yet succeed.
And Kurz is a Primarch, agreed Prato. His psychic ability is raw and aggressive, but potentially great.
Nonetheless, is it not simply more likely that his commanders have engaged opportunistically, hoping to draw us out?
Striking at Macragge, at the capital, said Tetrarch Valentus Dolor, the Primarch's champion.
Lorgar's zealots tried that already, and they failed. Kurz's legion is weaker both in numbers and discipline. He is mad, but he is not a fool. He would not order that.
Maybe, said Gilliman. And how can he communicate this through the storm if he did not exploit the Pharos beam?
I do not think it likely he used the Pharos, my lord, said Dantioch. He was only within the point of illumination. He could not have been able to use it, even if he were aware of its capabilities. The whole time he was there, while the Pharos was active, he was engaged in combat.
Even so, we have to view this from the position of worst-case theoretical, said Gilliman. An organized attack with some strategic aim. The end result is the same. Whether this is blind coincidence, the deliberate work of Kurz, or fate arranged by some diabolical entity of the warp. His head twitched at the mention of such things, a tiny shake of denial. He was still coming to terms with the truths hidden from him by his father. Or, most likely, some combination of all of these possibilities. The causes are somewhat irrelevant. We must ask ourselves, what do the Night Lords hope to achieve?
Dantioch began to speak, but the scream of a flight of gunships chancing an approach to the mountain drowned him out. The flat note of anti-aircraft fire from the Emperor's watch thudded around primary location Alpha. The Pharos's image shivered at the interruption.
They do not want to destroy the beacon, or we would already be dead, Dantioch eventually managed.
We can be clear on that, said Pollux. They besiege the mountain when they could reduce it to rubble from orbit.
Gilliman grinned, an almost feral expression that Pollux had never seen in his face before.
Fortunate for me, I have two experts in that field of war to hand. We shall stand shoulder to shoulder in glorious battle. I shall lead as many men through the Pharos field as we can. Sally forth from the mountain and smash this attack before it goes any further.
Mutters of concern went around Gilliman's assembled aides.
My lord, you cannot, said Pollux. Your concern is noted, but do not presume to tell me what I can and cannot do, Pollux.
A babble of conflicting voices filled the shell of the Chapel of Memorial. Dantioch shouted,
Peace!
He had to do so twice before the argument subsided.
Peace, brothers! We cannot bicker among ourselves while the traitors are at the gate. Pollux is correct, Lord Gilliman. To bring you here alone or with a handful of your men, what will that achieve? We have a slender chance of breaking out traded for the near certainty of your loss. The Loyalist war effort would be dealt a terrible blow from which it will never recover. We cannot afford the risk.
I am a Primarch, said Gilliman.
You are one Primarch against thousands of legionaries. You say the Lord Lion is not present, and you, my lord, would not countenance risking the Emperor in this venture.
Gilliman breathed in heavily.
No, you are correct. I would not. How many men can we bring across before we are fully invested, or the Night Lords find a way into the mountain? A company? Two? For the moment, the Night Lords show all signs of taking the Pharos, but they may grow tired of dying and obliterate us. They are capricious. It is in their nature to act unpredictably, said Pollux.
The integrity of the field is delicate, and we cannot easily tune it, although you yourself have used the device, my lord. Pollux was able to step across only in time of great peril, when his life was in mortal danger, said Dantioch.
I'd suggest this is a time of great peril, said Dolor. But I agree. You should not go, my lord. There is no retreat once the journey is undertaken. You cannot come back.
Surely, there is time to take hundreds of men through, thousands, said Caspian.
With Lord Gilliman and the Emperor Sanguinius to lead them, they could cast back the invaders.
With respect, my Lord Caspian, if the operation is so simple, step across, said Dantioch.
Very well. Caspian strode right towards Dantioch's throne. It appeared he would step into primary location Alpha, but before he could reach the warsmith, his seemingly solid physical form faded. His footsteps continued, and Dantioch had the ghostly feeling of something passing through him, as he had had many times before the device had been tuned. Cursing came from behind them.
As you can see, the machine is unpredictable. The translocation principle is not an exact science. We may succeed in bringing only a handful of warriors across, if any. I am sure you might make the proving step once more, Lord Gilliman, and the Emperor Sanguinius too. But the others...
Pollux lifted his hand and dared point at the Primarch.
You recognize this for what it is. Then give me a damn alternative, Pollux. Do not build your walls in front of me.
We shall concentrate the beam on Macragge to allow our ship's passage here. We shall hold out as long as we might. If we are to fall, so be it. You can obliterate the enemy when you arrive and take it back. We must keep their attention focused on taking the Pharos. Encourage them not to destroy it. If we all fall, so be it. They shall never unlock the secrets before you arrive.
It will take a day, no more, to assemble a large enough retribution fleet from all three legions, if need be, said Delor.
This is a 13th Legion problem, said Gilliman. I will not involve my brothers.
Then our own warriors should more than suffice, my lord, said Delor.
How long will you be able to keep the beam focused? If it is cut off, we shall find ourselves with months of hard travel ahead, and nothing will be achieved.
It would be better to handle this alone, said Melios. The entirety of the Blood Angels fleet will remain to defend Macragge alongside elements of the First. It would be a poor practical to separate our forces without knowing the full extent of the challenge.
Gilliman stood tall and crossed his arms.
We need more time.
Pollux and Dantioch need help, so that they can keep the Pharos active for long enough so that we might reach them with overwhelming force, preferably by surprise.
A diversion?
A distraction. A large enough fleet to draw some of the Night Lords away, keep their full attention off the Pharos. With luck, they may effect a landing and reinforce the troops within.
The closer, the better, said Delor. The larger, the better, said Caspian.
Just so, said Delor.
Are there any fleets that fulfill both criteria near enough to Sotha?
Lucretius Corvo is currently at Beramin with 6 capital ships, 2 companies of the 13th Legion, and a demi-company of Dark Angels. With the light path of the Pharos, he could be there within 18 hours, my lord, said Dantioch.
Indeed.
Gilliman became decisive, the mood transmitted from the chapel ruins changing from dismay to resolution as his plan took shape in his mind.
There is no time to lose. Contact Corvo immediately. Fix the beam upon Beramin. By the time Corvo is at Sotha, we shall be ready. Tell him to engage in diversionary tactics, no direct confrontations. If he can, he will attempt a landing to reinforce Mount Pharos. Once he has arrived, re-establish contact with me and focus the transit beam upon Macragge so that my fleet may set out in force.
What if we should fail before he arrives, or before you arrive, said Dantioch. We must prepare for all eventualities.
Secondary orders.
Disable the mechanical machinery linked to the quantum engines to prevent the Night Lords utilizing the Pharos. It will set us back months, but it is better than losing the beacon. In extremis, Corvo must destroy the Pharos itself, Gilliman concluded.
How will he take such an order from me, my lord? I am not known to him, and my kind are not trusted, with good reason.
Your reputation is better than you think, Warsmith.
Gilliman's face lifted a little at some pleasant recollection.
Remind him that he made a promise. He'll understand. Can you hold the beacon until then?
As far as we know, the enemy cannot conduct traditional teleportation through the light of the Pharos. Their communications are disrupted by it. We have 80 of your legion, the 40 lightkeepers of Captain Pollux's, and the other legions. A handful of auxilia, a single maniple of Legio Cybernetica Thalaxii, and a pair of war automata to hold a mountain full of holes against...
Dantioch looked to Pollux.
10 to 20,000 Night Lords?
Your calculations are correct, said Pollux. Difficult odds, but not impossible.
Then I will stand as I stood at the Shardenhold, alone in the face of treachery, said Dantioch. He pulled himself out of his chair and got down to one knee with obvious discomfort.
I swear to you, Lord of Ultramar, that I will prevail here, as I did there.
You will not be alone, said Pollux, not this time. I will make all haste to Sotha, said Gilliman. Protect the Pharos, Warsmith Dantioch, if you can.
Yes, my lord.
I go to speak with my brother. Refocus the beam on Corvo.
We shall speak again after his counterattack is launched.
Dantioch got up unsteadily and bowed. The image faded away. The warsmith and Captain Pollux turned to face the assembled defenders of the Pharos. Men of Pollux's own legion, a smattering of warriors from others, a battered remnant of the Aegida Company, a tattered wall to stop a tidal wave of violence.
"We must prepare," said Pollux. "All our efforts are needed, whether legionary, mortal, or mechanicum."
From the back of the room, where other warriors assembled, Datasmith Beta Phi 97 chittered in Binaric. Beta Phi's young tech adept assistant spoke for the Datasmith. In contrast to Beta Phi 97's entirely metal visage, he was still mostly flesh. A single data core tube bent out of his head through a gaping hole in his hood, its socket riveted to his bare scalp.
"My master protests at the inclusion of Mechanicum constructs in the Pharos' defense assets. He insists his machines are not battle-ready."
"Every hand is needed, be it of flesh or of steel," said Pollux.
Magos Carantine spoke.
"We are not Tagmata, Captain. Warfare is not our prime function. We are of the Ordo Biologists. We are xenologists."
The Datasmith's protest noises became emphatic. Carantine blurted something angry-sounding at him, and the two engaged in a ferocious, fast-paced symphony of data exchange.
"The automata have long been used for peaceful purposes," translated the Datasmith's adept. "He is distressed at the thought of damage to such venerable machines. They are not blessed for combat."
Pollux gave the younger man such a look he shrank back apologetically.
"Tell him to fit them with weapons and prime their data wafers for belligerence, or everyone in this mountain will die. Is that choice binary enough for him?"
"My master Beta Phi 97 calculates 27% probability of death in the next hour."
"The odds will be worse without his machines. Time is short, and our enemies ready. We have plans to make."
Lucretius Corvo, captain of the 90th Nova Company of the Ultramarines, was deep in concentration. Upon the lectern he kept in his day room, he always stood to read, was a text of ancient Terran battle sagas from the ship's library. Despite their archaic and somewhat sanguinary nature, he was thoroughly engrossed. There were echoes of the present in the exploits of these long-gone tribes. Such savagery he had seen from the traitors, particularly the World Eaters, that he had become somewhat single-minded in seeking out historical examples of the same. What education he might gain from this activity, he was not sure, but he had come to look forward to the brief times he had for reading. For all his cold manner, Corvo enjoyed stories. A discreet cough made him raise his head. It was a mark of his nature that the only sign of the immense surprise he experienced was a slight raising of his eyebrows. One side of his quarters had disappeared. In its place was an image of a large cavern of sinuous, glossy black stone, dimly lit and crammed with ugly cogitator banks. At first, he thought he looked into a Mechanicum facility, for the Mechanicum rarely bothered applying fine aesthetics to devices made for their own uses. Then he saw the essayer of the cough, a masked figure in battered Mark III warplate, seated in a heavy wooden chair, and he realized what he saw.
"Warsmith Dantioch, I presume," said Corvo.
He shut his book softly and came out from behind the lectern to better regard the room that should not be there. He passed his hand over the boundary between ship and mountain. That the air did not change temperature or consistency told him what he saw was simply an image, but every other sense denied its illusory nature.
"This must be the marvel of the Pharos," he added, once he had examined the phenomenon to his satisfaction. "I am impressed."
"I am Barabbas Dantioch," said the warsmith. He spoke raspingly, the words catching in his throat.
"And this is the Pharos."
"To what do I owe this honour? We have not spoken before."
"Until now, your orders have not needed to be updated, Captain Corvo. Now they do.
Listen to me well, for I have news of the gravest import and a new command from your Primarch. Sotha is under attack by an overwhelming force of the Night Lords. Rabute Gilliman orders you to our aid. Corvo remained as expressionless as a stone.
Your reputation precedes you, Warsmith, and I am aware of the importance of the beacon. But this is no routine change. How will you verify these orders?
Gilliman himself gave them. He said that if you were to question them, I was to remind you of a promise you made him.
A rare smile crossed Corvo's face, gone so quickly that its existence was debatable.
Not only him. A promise I made to my birth father first, and that I will forever stand by, to always remember who I am and who I have been.
Corvo nodded.
I also remember who it is that I serve. Very well. We shall come to you, Warsmith Dantioch. Allow me a few moments to confer with my staff officers and the fleet. Then you must tell me all you can.
There is no time. We are under siege. We must talk now.
Corvo nodded again. He waved down a hovering voxhorn in the form of a singing naiad from her pedestal in the room's decorations.
Fleet-wide voxcast. Authority 8497.
Actuated, said the immobile lips of the naiad.
Attention all hands. This is Captain Corvo. Prepare for immediate departure. All crew are to be recalled from dock. Suspend resupply.
The captain's voice echoed throughout the ship a fraction of a second after he spoke.
My shipmasters and officers will take care of the rest, Warsmith.
He looked expectantly at Dantioch. Corvo was not easily given to amazement, but the clarity of the image fascinated him. The Warsmith spoke rapidly, his breathless voice struggling to impart the information he must. Corvo listened without interruption. By the time Dantioch had finished, Corvo's fleet was casting off from high anchor at Beramin and making all haste to Sotha.